Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Peter Franchot has been a member of the Maryland House of Delegates, state comptroller, and now he wants to be governor. And we have questions for him about his candidacy and what sets him apart from the packed field of Democratic hopefuls. This is our Candidates Corner conversation, and lines are open. Give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. A quick reminder, you can hear all of the Candidates Corner interviews via podcast on WHUR.com. And it won't end here. There are more to come. And we are also reaching out to the Republican candidates for governor as well. Mr. Franchot, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Harold, it's an honor to be on your show. I love WHUR, and I love the fact you're a Morgan State grad. That means something to me, you know, as a Marylander, that's for sure. And I noticed that you're—is it Kappa Alpha Psi?
Kappa Alpha Psi, yeah. And my mother's proud that I graduated finally too. Although that was a long time ago in a galaxy far away.
Harold, I gotta ask you though. I've been married, you know, now 42 years to a wonderful, wonderful woman. We have a great family, Annie Mar, and we have two kids and now three grandkids. But I'm interested in buying your romance novel. I think I might make that as a gift to her.
Well, yeah, obviously Google works, but we're not going to talk about me tonight. I will say, I've been familiar with you since you ran against Connie Morella way back in the pre-internet days of the late 80s. But for those who are not familiar with you, tell our listeners who you are and why you want this job.
Sure. No. Well, my wife looked at me and said, "Are you crazy running for governor?" And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm excited about it." That was a little bit of a joke, but it's a big deal to run for governor, and I'm more or less prepared for it my whole life. When I was in college up in New England in my sophomore year, I dropped out to oppose the war in Vietnam, and spent 6 months working for Gene McCarthy, who was running against the Democratic incumbent president, Lyndon Johnson, because I felt it was a rich man's war being fought by poor people. That was what we said, and this was back in 1968. Anyway, in leaving college, gave up my student deferment and was drafted and spent the two best years of my life, as far as becoming serious about public service, in the Army. And I really, really am grateful for my drill sergeant. I didn't like him very much at the time, but he knocked the rough edges off me. I came out of the Army, finished college, went to law school, worked for environmental groups and consumer protection groups as a kind of public interest advocate, I guess, lobbying Democrats and Republicans. I often was as upset with Democrats as I was Republicans, because we were talking about things like nuclear power and consumer safety, et cetera. So then I got hired by the Union of Concerned Scientists to come down to Washington in 1978. And, I came down and worked for them just as Three Mile Island was happening back then, and worked for them for a number of years. Then a young congressman named Ed Markey, he's now a U.S. senator, hired me to be his staff director. I worked for him until 1986. Then I spent 20 years in the legislature on the Appropriations Committee, all immersed in the budget details of the state of Maryland as my committee assignment. And then 16 years ago, I took a chance and ran against the Babe Ruth of Maryland politics, William Donald Schaefer, who was then the incumbent comptroller. That's an elected statewide position. It's the most powerful position that is the most unknown, I guess, and commented about. But it's a great position. I've had 16 years at it, and I've basically guided the state's economy in the right direction. And, as I said, I'm very excited about the possibility of doing not just a great job as comptroller, but imagine, since I've done a good job there, imagine what I could do as governor. And so I'm fully locked into this election. There's 1 week to go. I've led in every poll since the beginning. I continue to lead. I think it's because I've made 10,000 visits to small businesses all over the state, that I've been a huge champion of minority and women-owned businesses. Everybody knows the fact that I've scrutinized over $90 billion of spending at the Board of Public Works, over 22,000 contracts I've scrutinized on behalf of the public, trying to make sure that the state contracts are not incumbent vendor protection programs, but in fact allow in new, innovative, fresh, energy, and talented entrepreneurs who have often minority and women-owned businesses. And the state bureaucracy is set up to be have all sorts of barriers to new entrants, as you could imagine. It's called economic protectionism. I fight against those all the time. And I think that's why I'm endorsed by the chair of the Maryland Legislative Black Caucus, also the head of the Prince George's delegation, Nick Charles. Daryl Barnes is the chairman. My campaign chair up in Baltimore is for the entire state, is Reverend Dr. Al Hathaway, who is a renowned pastor of the Union Baptist and now is just one of the key figures in the state. Anyway, I have tremendous support across all of the communities in the state, but I'm particularly strong with minorities and women because of my advocacy for allowing them in to the modern economy, particularly as far as state contracts are.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is our Candidates Corner. We're talking to Maryland State Comptroller Peter Franchot. He is running for governor, a Democrat who's been in Maryland politics for quite some time. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call again. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. So let me ask you, you are, as we said, you're running for governor. Governor Hogan is, by most accounts, considered, you know, popular even among Democrats. He was also considered an outsider. He was a businessman. He was not a career politician, and he did win re-election handily. Do you think that being an insider, a career politician in the state of Maryland, will help or hurt you? Some people would say that they want to continue to have fresh voices and fresh ideas from outside of the political spectrum.
The normal criticism, Harold, is that I'm too close to Governor Hogan because I serve with him on the Board of Public Works, he and the state treasurer, and I have to vote on every contract over $200,000. And he and I have made partnerships. First of all, he's a rational, functioning, mature, relatively nonpartisan elected official. And I'm like him in the sense that I'm an outsider. I mentioned that I work for all these not-for-profit groups and all these environmental groups. You know, that gave me a different perspective than coming up through the Democratic clubs where I might have been appointed to office. I wasn't. I fought my way into elected office, and I'm an outsider, but I've got tremendous insider skills. And I think that's why so many people vote for me and why I have support and trust and confidence all over the state, from Democrats, independents, and Republicans. We have a closed primary in Maryland. Only Democrats can vote. And the criticism often when I'm running is that I'm often too close to Hogan, not that I'm a opposite of him. I'm actually somewhat of a similar package for people, except I have, unlike him, I have this tremendous amount of skill and knowledge from having been in elected office and represented the little guy and the voiceless and the people whose voices might be there, but nobody listens to them. You know, I know you live in Baltimore, I think. And
I do.
The schools up there have, right as we speak, tens of thousands of kids that go to class in unair-conditioned classrooms when it's hot and unheated classrooms when it's cold in the winter. And I have fought the fight with Governor Hogan because he supported me on it. You need two votes on the Board of Public Works. he supported me on that battle. We joined with the NAACP and tried to get the Justice Department to intervene on civil rights violations. Elijah Cummings, the great congressman from Baltimore, took me aside and said, the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me in my entire life was when I was going as a youngster to elementary school. It was in a segregated school in West Baltimore. And once a year, we had to be marched out of our school, three blocks down to the segregated white school, to take the state exam. Mm. Why? Because the white school was air-conditioned and ours wasn't.
Well, let me stop you, because I've got...
It's just an example of, you know, I think I'm an outsider with insider skills, and I think that's why people respond positively to me all over the state.
Let me go to the phone lines. We've got a lot of folks who want to talk to you. Let's go to Greg.
I'd love to hear that.
Greg is calling from Baltimore. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, gentlemen. I have a question. I am in my late 50s, but I'm starting to think towards retirement. I've been in Maryland for most of my life. Now, what would you do, Mr. Francho, as governor, as an incentive for me to stay in Maryland, you know, after I retire? Because I'll be honest with you, you know, Maryland is not the greatest state to retire. They tax a lot of your income in retirement. There's a lot of other attractive states like Florida and other places that, you know, and I see why people go there, because, you know, you can afford to live there comfortably. Well, so I'm just curious, what would you do to keep me in Maryland after I retire?
Well, first thing I do, what is your first name, if I could ask?
His name is Greg, but go ahead.
Greg, that's a great question. I hear it all over the state. And the major problem for retirees who often are on fixed incomes, the major impediment for them to staying in Maryland is not the state taxes necessarily. Those are slightly, you know, your income is not as great as it was when you're working. The biggest problem for retirees on fixed incomes is the local property tax. And I am going to design a program starting on day one where we set up what I call a mentoring program. And so you, say you retire at age 60, you could enter a program where if you agree to mentor six or seven or a few more young adults or students in Maryland in what they need to know as far as financial skills and life skills and advice, how to be serious and how to succeed and be independent financially, et cetera, we will give you a significant break on your local property tax.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Francho.
Let
me ask you this, because as someone who may be looking at retirement within the next 5 years, I'm going to be honest with you. And I, you know, nothing against mentoring, but I think the whole point of retirement is not to work. So why would I want to mentor? Why would you want to put me to work when my whole point is not to work?
Well, that's okay, and you wouldn't have to join the program, of course. But the key here is that it wouldn't be that time-consuming. It's something you could do with a smaller number, and we haven't vetted out all of the details of it. But the concept there, I think, is valid because, you know, we're not going to ask you to do full-time work. We're going to ask you to do a little bit of return to the young people to help them understand what they need to do in order to be successful in life. Now, as far as your income, obviously the legislature and the governor passed a four-year plan to remove some income tax from retirees. The question is whether that's affordable for the state mm-hmm. in a long-term state. But I am not going to raise your taxes. I am someone who introduced the gas tax holiday concept in March of this year. It was enacted for the whole month of April very successfully. And I've navigated the state through a tremendous recession in 2008. And I think the reason I need your vote or would ask for your vote is that of all the candidates, I'm the one that's got the most experience hands-on as far as dollars and cents and what the state needs to do to continue to be a prosperous state. So, yeah, retirees may be able to move to Alabama or Mississippi or Florida. Those states are not going to be high on people's popularity list because of all their legislation they're passing these days. but I would encourage you to stick around for a year with me as governor. I think you'll be very happy as far as the change in perception of mm-hmm. the state of Maryland from a high tax, if it moves, we'll tax it, very, very liberal. I'm a Democrat. I'm proud to be a Democrat, but I'm not a robot. Because I have a public interest background, I'm not interested in simply raising money for every good-sounding idea. I want things to be affordable, pragmatic, good for the state, and I'll always put the state of Maryland ahead of even the Democratic Party, much as I love the values and principles of the party.
Greg, thank you so much.
Greg, I'll be in touch with you, Greg.
Greg, thank you so much for your phone call. I'm going to start this question. We may have to take a break in about 90 seconds, but you mentioned the gas tax holiday that you introduced in March, but after that ended, there was this huge dust-up between you and the governor about who had the authority to do it again. Why was that? If you were
both of us worked together, but on these instances we were both wrong. I was wrong. He had the power completely. He was wrong. I had the power. It's frankly the legislature that needs to act. And I'm fully convinced that right after the primary next week, there will be announcements that we're coming back for the purpose of passing a gas tax holiday and also survival checks for some of our low-wage earning families, because inflation is just hammering the state of Maryland right now. It's almost double-digit, and we need to do something, and I believe the legislature will respond.
But my question is, there was this dust-up about, you said the governor had the authority, the governor said you had the authority, and you just said that you brought up the idea in March. So what happened between March and the second time that this issue came up?
Well, March 10th, I suggested that we do it because I also announced a $7.5 billion surplus from the state. He immediately said that's a great idea and agreed that there should be a 90-day gas tax holiday. The legislature only did 30 days. And the question at the end of the 30 days was, could he unilaterally or me unilaterally extend it legally? No, we can't. We traded comments back and forth, but that's okay. Now everybody is on the same page. The legislature has to do it, and in any event, the legislature will in all likelihood, because it's such a necessary issue right now because of the fact that the Fed is raising interest rates, understandably, to avoid a deep recession.
I've got to take a break, yeah. Mr. Franchot.
Yeah. I'll pick it up.
This conversation will continue in just a bit on SiriusXM Channel 141. Christian calling from Montgomery County. Byron calling from Capitol Heights. You're up next. Stay with us. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is The Candidate's Corner, and tonight we're talking to Peter Franchot, Maryland Comptroller and Democratic candidate for governor. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go to Christian. Christian, calling from Montgomery County. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. Good evening, Comptroller Franchot. I had a question regarding your position on expanding the 495 Beltway and 270. I just wanted to get clarity. I know Governor Hogan had a proposal that I believe you might have supported that would have hurt businesses and homes and schools and kind of just like bulldozed around the Beltway is what it seemed like. And I wanted to get a sense of where you are on that and what your plans would be for governor.
Oh, no, that's great. And I'm a huge fan of mass transit. The Purple Line, I've been its chief advocate for 20 or 25 years. That's over budget and delayed, but it's going to be finished. I'm a big fan of Red Line up in Baltimore. I'm also a fan of redoing our infrastructure as far as bridges and roads and keeping up with the fact that millions of Marylanders still use their used cars and to get back and forth, not mass transit. So when the governor presented his plan, it was a large one, just like you mentioned. It ran into a lot of controversy. It cost $18 billion, and it basically put toll roads on 495 all the way over to Prince George's County from the American Legion Bridge. I cut the project by two-thirds, from $18 billion down to $6 billion, and limited the toll lanes simply to the American Legion Bridge and then back up 495 to where 270 comes in, up 270 to the ICC. That's a big improvement. Most of the local officials, many of them support that, and it completely exempts the eastern part of Montgomery County and all of Prince George's County from what was originally the governor's proposal. So, and it's got all sorts of amendments that I added to it as a condition for my vote, because it, once again, it needed two votes, and I was the second vote. And those concern that buses and HOV, cars can go for free in the toll lanes, that there are all sorts of payments for transit from the tolls to the local, to Montgomery County and to the local municipalities. So it's a big improved package. It's much less expensive. It doesn't have any of the environmental or eminent domain claiming of homes or parkland or any of that in it. It's been reduced simply to relieving the unbelievable traffic congestion that is on the Beltway in the morning and in the evening. And I think that's the right thing to do, and we're using the private sector as a source of capital.
Okay,
thank
Christian,
you for the question.
Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Byron, calling from Capitol Heights. Thanks for hanging on, Byron. What's on your mind?
Yes, first I want to congratulate Comptroller Francho for his candidacy and the great work he's been doing in Maryland. I have a two-pronged question. One, as governor, what are his plans for curbing the rising trend of youth violence in terms of gun violence and carjacking? Secondly, what are his plans to bridge the gap between Republicans and Democratic voters so that we can become one great American family again? I think we've become too polarized, too divided in terms of partisan values and views.
Well, Byron, that's a great statement. Thank you. On crime, there are hot spots in Baltimore. There are hot spots in Prince George's and Montgomery County on carjacking, as you mentioned. The key to that, and there are shootings in Hagerstown from time to time, there are hot spots that emerge, and the key is to immediately respond with our elite law enforcement, primarily state police, but also federal U.S. Marshals, and have a sustained presence for 5, 6, or 7 months continuously, not just a one-time only effort to sweep up the violent repeat offenders that are still on the streets and have some open warrants or some other reason for them to be taken off the streets. That kind of quick, swift, determined, sustainable action will take care of these hot spots. Obviously, the long-term test is how do we get jobs for young people and how do we get them involved in, treating their lives seriously is something that they really need to be successful in. But the issue of how you unite people, and I'm going to unite the entire state because I get all of these votes from people that often don't agree with me on the issue, but they like the fact I'm a straight shooter and that I put the state of Maryland before my own party. And I think the key is that we have to unite the state around the idea that government can be competent, just like my agency, the Comptroller's Office, answers phone calls promptly and gets refunds back very quickly. The rest of state government can be very competent also. And so we convince people that they can have some trust and confidence in state government. We then do things like creating 100,000 new jobs with our private sector. But then we go back to people and say, we want you to be united behind the governor and the rest of the elected officials in Maryland because they're bringing you economic prosperity. That is the key.
But before you go,
economic prosperity that is inclusive, not just for a certain sector of our population, but for everybody in our population. And that's what Monique Anderson Walker, my wonderful running mate from Prince George's County, and I are determined to do. Economic prosperity through diversity and inclusiveness, and most of all, ownership by minorities and women of businesses.
Before you go into the answer about partisan politics, I did want to ask you something that is really important. As you know, there is a really high-profile crime that is captured the attention of everyone. This is in Baltimore, but this could very well happen anywhere. It's the Squeegee Boy murder. And you know that from, you know, all reports that a driver, after being approached by one of the Squeegee Boys who clean windshields for excuse me, money. He approached one of the Squeegee Boys with a bat after pulling his car over, and then he was shot and killed. There were reports this morning that police had a person of interest. Now, the police commissioner said that's not true. That notwithstanding, that happened in Baltimore, but it could happen anywhere in the state. What might you do as governor to help young people with jobs instead of, you know, dealing with this, you know, the Squeegee Boy issue?
Yeah, no. And that, what happened is completely unacceptable, and it cannot be tolerated because it's simply, you know, it's like having $20 million worth of negative advertising about the people's perception around the country of Baltimore. We can't have that, and it was tragic that it happened. And I'm sure that once the investigation is done, we'll know more about it. But the key is, what are the Squeegee Boys out there doing? They're trying to earn some money. They're trying to earn $60, $70. That's what they need to – that's their only source of income for them and often some members of their families. So why not? Well, for example, we have the huge port of Baltimore, which has a tremendous potential to be a global logistics center. I mean, literally, every one of the Squeegee kids could be paid far more than they get paid cleaning windshields and standing unsafely to themselves and unsafely to motorists out in the intersections. All they need are day jobs that will pay them some money, some cash at the end of the day. And that's what can, I think, be provided in a partnership between the state of Maryland and the city government of Baltimore, particularly utilizing the assets of the port of Baltimore, because there's so much potential there for that port to be a global logistics center. And the issue is resolvable once you understand why the kids are out there. They're out there trying to earn a small, relatively small amount of money. And it used to be they were selling water. I don't know whether you remember that.
And they still do.
Back in the day.
Yeah, they still do.
They still do. But it's basically kind of a, you know, an entrepreneurial push that gets them out there. Then, of course, you have things that escalate out of control. And it's, as I said, completely unacceptable because of the tragedy that it represents, but also because of the national perception. So we can change that. I mean, it's really... Rather than absorb $20 million worth of negative publicity all over the country, why don't we just spend $1 million or two getting day labor jobs for each of these kids?
Hmm. Also,
and, maybe we could get I forget his name, Greg, I think, in his retirement to help us, you know, mentor a few of them and show them that what they need is money. And the way to do it is it's a lot easier than standing out there trying to wipe people's windshields in dangerous intersections.
A quick response to Byron's second question about the partisan political divide among Marylanders. Quickly, your thoughts about that.
Yeah, we're going to unify them around the concept, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, that their state government is competent, that they can answer the phone, that they're not loaded up with fraudulent wasting of their money, and that they are competent as far as the job that they are each doing, these agencies. For example, I'm going to pick up all the trash along state roads, have state highway repair all the potholes on state roads, and I'm going to have every state agency do what my agency does, which is answer the phone promptly within 60 seconds with a live, friendly employee. That's hard to do. I'm going to challenge us to do it publicly in the first 3 months of my governorship. And that will allow us then to introduce some bigger ideas. But the main thing we're trying to do is unite people around the idea that government's okay as long as it's pragmatic and affordable, but most of all because it leads to economic prosperity for all of us if it's properly accountable to the public. And I just have a lot of optimism that people are going to lower their temperatures because I get votes, as I said, from all sorts of people that may be different from me politically. But they realize that I'm trying to do things in the best interest of the state of Maryland.
Byron, thank you so much. About cleaning up the roads, one of the things that maybe this is a little pet peeve question, but it just seems that in Charles County, Montgomery County, and other parts of the state, the high grass just doesn't seem to be a big problem on state roads. But, because I commute every day, 295. And I see, these guys out there mowing. I saw them out there today. But why am I missing something here with Prince George's County and the high grass? I mean, it's like, elephant grass in Vietnam. Maybe I'm telling my age, yeah. But what can be done about that?
Well, the state highways are governed by the state maintenance crews, and right now the trash is built up, maybe because of COVID, maybe because of other reasons, but it's become unacceptable. And we have on Route 50, for example, so much trash that it's just embarrassing. And also you have dead animals from time to time that, I've passed by numerous times the same dead deer. It's just there. And we need to put our best foot forward as far as at least the view of the state from highways and people passing through it. So that's the reason. The reason I'm stating that we do it publicly and we also cut the grass, obviously, and remove that kind of hazard from the roadsides. But the reason I'm doing that publicly is I want people to see that government can do that. Then when we say we're going to create 100,000 jobs and we're going to bring 100,000 young people to the state if they live, work, and pay taxes for 5 years and retire their student debt, they're not going to balk and say, oh, no, that's impossible. Government can't do that. Or we do something innovative with the K-12 education system or health care or home ownership, creating 300,000 new homeowners in the state. People won't say, oh, no, you can't do that because government's so incompetent. They're going to say, this guy's a straight shooter. He's always gotten our refunds back quickly. He's always run a great shop as comptroller. Now he's governor. He's cleaning up the roads. He's fixing the potholes. He's cutting the grass. We're going to trust him. We're going to have confidence that he can do something that's affordable about these other problems, particularly the problem of prosperity in the state being restricted to certain percentages of the population, the higher two-thirds, as far as ownership, as far as equity, as far as any chance that they have some wealth at the end of their lives to pass on to their kids. I am really into this idea of uniting the state around the common idea that we all benefit.
Let me ask you, I got a text from Loretta. Loretta says, what will happen to the at-will employees in the upper echelons of government, Democrat, Republicans, and the like, who are, who've kind of, worked for the Hogan administration, but are now concerned that you're just going to clean house if you were to become governor. Would that be your strategy?
No, because there's 16 years as the comptroller, I'm the chief tax administrator. There's no such thing as a Democratic tax return or Republican tax return, period. As governor, there's no such thing to me presented as, oh, it's a Republican idea, therefore don't do it. No, if it's a Republican idea and a good idea, we'll definitely look closely at it. If you're an at-will employee selected under a Republican governor and you're competent and you're doing your job, fine. That's what we want. We want people who are competent doing their job for the state of Maryland. I don't care if they're Republican. I don't care if they're independent. I don't care if they're liberal. I don't care if they're conservative or Democrat. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to make sure that we cut through that partisanship, which can be very, very mean-spirited and full of demonization of the other side and full of insults, and just scrap that and deal with, hey, look, we're all Marylanders. Even if we disagree, we don't have to be disagreeable. We don't have to fight with each other. We certainly don't have to hurl insults at each other. Yeah. And I think that's the reason that I will be a successful governor. And and I'm looking forward to it because how exciting a state do we have? I know that earlier gentlemen said that we don't compare well with Florida and Mississippi and Alabama. People are going to be flooding up from those states when their state, when their legislatures enact all these laws that they're planning to from the right wing. Maryland's going to look like a safe harbor of civilized society and a state that's got its act together as far as its fiscal house.
I would say I would say that having lived in Alabama, Alabama, Mississippi, and even Florida may not be the biggest financial threat to Maryland. I would argue North Carolina is where the biggest competition is. Just anecdotally.
Well, that's a good point. But I'm talking about Maryland poaching away. I mean, you know the companies in Texas, all these tech companies that have moved down there. Well, with all the new Texas laws, their employees may not be very happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly their female employees, and they might want to move branches of their businesses up to Maryland, where we treat everybody equally, and we have a much different approach to social issues. So all I'm saying is that Maryland's going to be a go-to state under Governor Franchot, and it's so great to hear the questions from real people because, in politics so often, everything is kind of prepared and canned and given to you in, gotcha-type questions.
Yeah.
The questions I've gotten tonight, Harold, have been real questions.
Well, here's another real question. You speak about a black and brown agenda, a level playing field. Talk to me about that.
Well, here's the problem. Redlining is alive and well. It used to be that it was legal and banks and the private sector would not put capital or invest money in African-American, minority, black or brown communities. Now it's illegal to do that, but it continues. I mean, you can see it up in Baltimore with the transit system. Transit system is not connected anywhere. You can ride for weeks on that transit system and not get from one place to another because it still has a redlining residue to it. Same thing with investment of capital, investment of grocery stores, for example, in low wage earning communities. So the key here is to emphasize that black and brown communities need to have more investment from the private sector. And we have to partner with the state of Maryland and the banks to show them, for example, normally you don't give mortgages in this neighborhood, for example, in Baltimore. The state is going to partner with the private sector to guarantee mortgages that are given to particularly black and brown residents of those communities so that they can turn a high-risk loan into a low-risk loan. All I'm saying is this effort is to level the playing field and return black and brown communities primarily to being on the path to home ownership with good paying family supporting jobs and the opportunity of home ownership and developing some wealth and equity. I'm going to focus like a laser on that all over the state of Maryland. We're going to have a secretary of diversity, equity, and inclusion and black and brown ownership. That's the key. Mm-hmm. And Harold, I just emphasize that. You know, it's so important, and Monique Anderson-Walker has been so helpful to me on this issue. We need to give people who work for decades, and they pay their bills, they have income, they have some savings, but they don't have any equity. They don't have any wealth that they can pass on to their family members. And that's going to we're going to put the state on a different trajectory, Monique and I, in this regard. And you're going to see the difference because, once again, if you're on a path to the middle class or you're getting into the middle class, the entire economy benefits from your greater income and greater financial security. And that's what we're going to emphasize.
You also have a plan to make changes in student loan forgiveness. Kind of share your thoughts about that.
Yes, we did a big study in the tax agency and the demographics of our taxpaying citizens. We're growing very old very quickly. When you get old and you retire, you have less income, you pay less taxes. So we are going to recruit hundreds of thousands of young people to both stay in Maryland if they're already here going to school, or if they've gone to school outside of the state and come and live and work, pay taxes for 5 years in Maryland, we will forgive their student loan. Obviously, that's been vetted by our folks. It can't be medical school debt necessarily. It will be limited somewhere in the $25,000 to $30,000 range, but it will be a very successful lure, a little silver go to Maryland, please, if you're thinking about being able to retire your student debt and have some financial freedom to maybe start a small business or own a home, et cetera, without being burdened by this large amount of student debt. That's going to attract hundreds of thousands of young people to both stay in Maryland and come to Maryland. We need them to win the economic competition of the future, and that's a program that basically pays for itself.
Well, as comptroller, you kind of know where all the greenback bodies are buried, but that still sounds expensive considering just how expensive college is.
Well, we're not paying the whole debt.
Yeah, but even $25,000, yeah, that's that you know, that you know, that's not a 30-day gas tax.
I agree, but that's not a 30-day gas tax
holiday, yeah.
And that's why we have to limit it, and we have to make sure that it's an incentive to stay in Maryland or come to Maryland. But the fact that you're living, working, paying taxes for 5 years before you forgive the student debt, I think is enough of a game changer for the state of Maryland to be able to afford it. We have a $7.5 billion surplus that I reported on March 10th. That's not a small amount. It's obviously not recurring, but we are a wealthy state. Wall Street Journal says Maryland's the richest state and obviously the richest country in the history of the world, but on average family median income, Charles County and Prince George's County are the highest average family median income for black and brown communities in the country. And the state average family median income is higher than any other state in the country. So we've got wealth in the state. It's just that it's concentrated in the upper two-thirds rather than the lower one-third.
Let me go to the phone lines. Richard calling from Glendale. Thanks for hanging on, Richard. What's on your mind?
Hello, sir. This is Richard Elliott running for House of Delegates in the 24th, supporting Peter Franchot. I'd like to hear what our future governor wants me to tell to the voters of the 24th about why he's the best choice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fabulous. Yeah, Richard, good question. But the real reason is, look, the election's in a week. And a week to the day is the 19th. That's the election day. I'm ahead in the polls. I urge everybody to vote for me. I'm the only candidate among all of the candidates who is not just talking ideas, but has also been there. We mentioned the gas tax holiday. That was a real thing. It happened. I've delayed for 3 months, 90 days, for 3 years in a row, the tax date, from April 15th to July 15th, for Maryland taxes. Why did I do that? I did that as relief. It also proved to be a big boon to small businesses in the state. 600,000 businesses and families took advantage of a 90-day interest-free, penalty-free loan. I say that because I not only have ideas like all the other candidates, I've been in Maryland implementing gas tax holiday, implementing a $7.5 billion surplus, one time only for our economy. Implementing moving the tax day from April 15th to July 15th. I've actually done things that provide relief during these tough times. And coming up, we've got a huge problem with double-digit inflation, and I am the person that's capable of navigating the state through these difficult, uncertain economic times. So humbly, I ask for a vote, and I'm very humble because, I mean, think of being able to run for governor and actually win. It is an incredible honor to be in a position like I'm in. And, yeah, I suppose I could retire and reinvent myself as a grandfather, but I'm real excited at the possibility of governing with Bonique Anderson Walker. and doing something transformational for the state.
Richard, thank you so much for your phone call. Are you at all concerned, Mr. Franchot, about the report that voter turnout and early voting has been really low? And certainly, this is not a presidential election year. And it just seems that there needs to be some diesel added to inspire the voters to get out and vote. To what do you attribute that?
I attribute it to the fact that we're having an election in the summer, and people are distracted and looking elsewhere. I agree with you that voting rolls for the early voting are way down. The mail-in ballots are way up. And so I urge everybody to vote. That's the fundamental thing. I hope they do. But the reason we have such a poor turnout right now is because they picked the middle of July for a election date, and that's just a bad idea. It should be after Labor Day when people are coming back from the summer, or it should have been earlier in the year. But having it on July 19th is a really bad idea as far as turnout, because so many people are, A, distracted, and, B, elsewhere because it's summer. But given that, I continue to be number one in the polls all time after time after time. It's a tight race, but, you know, I appeal to you, Harold. I think if your family members in Baltimore and Prince George's voted for me, I would win.
Mm. Well,
you have enough of them that you would, I'm sure you have folks.
Most of my family is in Prince George's. I'm actually the only one in Baltimore, but
it's statewide. Yeah. I'm kidding a little bit. But
I know.
Small number of votes could win this entire thing.
Well, you know, I'm one of those guys who likes to go to the polls, So I'm certainly looking forward to that. Maryland Comptroller Peter Franchot, thank you so much for your time, sir. Good luck to you. I'm sure we'll be in touch.
It's an honor to be on the Daily Drum Show. Thank you, Harold.
Thank you. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, July 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.